Welcome to the Science Update Podcast. I'm Bob Hirshon, and this is the podcast for November 2, 2007. This week, a new computer program offers hope to people with disabilities. And could the appendix actually have a purpose? Justin Warner has the, well, hardly surprising answer. I mean, if the answer were no, that wouldn't really warrant a story now, would it? But first, Suzanne Bard is here to answer one of your questions. Suzanne, who's our lucky winner this week?
It's Christopher Bender of Spartanburg, South Carolina. He emailed to ask whether or not spiders can get caught in the webs of other spiders. We turn to Jonathan Coddington, an arachnologist at the Smithsonian Institution.
The short answer to whether or not spiders can get caught in the webs of other spiders or in silk is yes. Any spider can get caught in the web of any other spider or even in its own web. In other words, they don't have any special immunity to sticky silk or even just being entangled in silk in general.
But if a web-spinning spider were to get caught, he says it might be able to free itself by secreting an enzyme in its saliva that is powerful enough to cut silk. And in its own web, a spider spins some threads with no glue on them and avoids touching its sticky silk. Coddington also told me that spiders coat the tips of their legs with oil to prevent entanglement. If you have a science question...
Who, me?
No, not you, Bob. Oh. If any of our listeners out there have a science question, you can call us at 1-800-WHY-IS-IT or email us from our website at scienceupdate.com. If we use your question, you'll win a Science Update mug.
Yes, that would be our limited edition collectible Smarten Up mug, not available in any stores. Thanks, Suzanne. Well, most people know that spider silk is as strong as steel, but what about plastic? Well, you might be surprised to hear that researchers at the University of Michigan have developed a new plastic with the load-bearing strength of steel. Yet it's transparent, lightweight, and can be made at room temperature. Chemical engineer Nicholas Kotoff says his team makes it by alternating incredibly thin layers of clay with a polymer that binds to it.
And keep on just adding these layers one after the other.
One key to its strength lies in the chemical bonds between the polymer and the clay particles, which can reattach immediately after separating. And even though it takes about 300 layers to make a sheet as thick as household plastic wrap, it's the first time anyone's made a polymer this strong above the molecular scale. It could be used to make tough electronics components and lightweight military body armor in the future. Next, our New York correspondent, the erudite Justin Warner, filed this story that could give us renewed respect for an organ that was once thought to be entirely disposable.
Charles Darwin thought the human appendix was a useless leftover from our primitive evolutionary ancestors, but a new theory suggests this odd little intestinal appendage became obsolete much more recently, and only in certain parts of the world. It's been put forth by Duke University immunologist William Parker in collaboration with Professor of General Surgery R. Randall Bollinger and other colleagues.
The basic idea is that the appendix is a storehouse for good bacteria. The appendix protects those bacteria and more or less cultivates those bacteria.
Those would be the good bacteria that maintain our intestinal health and help with digestion. Parker's research has shown that the appendix is especially well stocked with something called biofilm, a sticky mix of these good bacteria and the mucus and nutrients that support them. He says it's also known that the appendix contains immune tissue, which nurtures biofilm. What's more, the organ's narrow shape and constant outflow of good bacteria would make it difficult for bad intestinal bugs to penetrate it.
Suppose some kind of amoeba gets in there that causes amoebic dysentery, something really bad. And basically, your normal gut bacteria are all contaminated. Everything is going to get flushed out as a defensive mechanism.
Except, he suggests, from the appendix, which would then replenish the good bacteria from its protected reserves. Luckily, Parker says such severe infections are rare in industrialized nations, which may explain why we can now live normally with our appendix taken out. On the other hand, he notes that appendicitis, in which the appendix inflames, swells, and eventually ruptures, is almost exclusively found in modern industrialized countries, perhaps owing to our understimulated and hypersensitive immune systems. So in short, modern sanitation may have led both to the obsolescence of the appendix and the occasional need to remove it.
Thanks, Justin. A brain chemical called oxytocin has long been known as the love hormone. In fact, farmers sometimes inject the compound into pregnant ewes to help them bond with their lambs. In the journal Psychological Science, researchers report that the compound is just as potent in people. They found that pregnant women who have high levels of oxytocin in their first trimester will go on to bond more closely with their babies than moms who had low levels of the compound. A study in the journal Emotions suggests that people are much quicker to notice a look of fear in someone's face than other emotions. They say a primitive part of the brain called the amygdala intercepts and reacts to fearful expressions before they reach other parts of the brain. They suspect that quickly interpreting the look on your friend's face when a lion was approaching had considerable survival value. All right, Suzanne, you've been waiting there patiently, and I understand you've got a report on a new software program to help people with disabilities use computers.
That's right. There are a number of technologies that help people with motor impairments operate computers without the use of their hands or arms. But most of them are expensive, invasive, or just plain clumsy. Now computer scientists have developed a software program that allows disabled users to rapidly control a mouse with just the sound of their voice.
The vocal joystick allows you to convert nonverbal vocalizations into continuous control signals, and these are signals that can be used to control a variety of different devices, and that includes things like a mouse pointer or a drawing application or a video game or browsing the web, anything that you can do with a mouse.
That's Jeff Bilmes of the University of Washington. He led the team that developed the software called the vocal joystick. Bilmes says controlling a mouse with the vocal joystick only takes adults a few minutes to learn. And when he and his team tested the software on a bunch of kids, they started controlling the mouse right away.
So let's say that you're trying to control a mouse pointer and you want to move up. So what you would do is you would say, ah, you would just say the vowel ah. As long as you're speaking that vowel ah, it would move the mouse pointer up. And if you say ooh, it would move the mouse pointer down. And if you say e, or just e, it would move to the left. And if you say ah, it would move to the right.
To make it go faster, you raise your voice. And to slow the mouse down, you get quieter. Other vowels control diagonal movements. He adds that the software won't replace existing vocal recognition software. Instead, the vocal joystick was designed to complement voice recognition software, much like a mouse complements a keyboard.
Thanks, Suzanne. Well, that's all for this week. Next week, the hidden calories lurking in so-called healthy restaurants, and find out why dolphins don't drown while they sleep. If you like what you hear on our podcast, tune into the Science Update Podcast Daily Edition. Increase your science IQ by listening in every day, Monday through Friday. You can find it on our website or at iTunes. Thanks for listening. I'm Bob Hirshon for AAAS, the Science Society.